Shadowcast, Episode 22. This week's story, Black Lodge, by T.H. Davis. T.H. Davis has been here before, way back in Episode 13 with The Man Who Typed Too Fast. This story, Black Lodge, is part of the Undercroft Stories, a collection that was just recently released. T.H. Davis was born in Dublin, Ireland. A lifelong fan of horror and a lover of all things weird, he grew up reading books by his heroes, Stephen King, James Herbert, M.R. James, and H.P. Lovecraft, among others. He's been dubbed the young Stephen King and the second incarnation of Lovecraft, and whether it's writing, art, or music, he works constantly to provide his fans with his dark dimensions, the fruits of his limitless imagination. In addition to the story this week, if you stop by the site after you listen, you can download your free PDF of all of the Undercroft stories. I'll have a link posted with this week's episode. And speaking of it, here is Black Lodge, by T.H. Davis. Luke sighed angrily to himself. The clock in the dashboard told him that it was just after 7 p.m. He'd told Ellie he'd be home by 6, and since his mobile phone had gone dead, he couldn't even get in touch with her. He could just see her pacing the floor, sick with worry. The roads in Cavan were particularly dangerous, even during the day. At night, the potential danger doubled as stupid teenagers sped down the country roads full of alcohol and considering themselves to be pretty much invincible. He came to Killeshandra and drove through the town, rubbing his eyes to banish sleep. The day had been long, leaving for Dublin at 7 that morning, meeting with the architects at 11, and then going around town picking up things here and there for the house and for Ellie. After the long journey through rush hour traffic, stopping long enough sometimes to get out of the car and have a cigarette, he was tired, and all he wanted to do was get home, reassure Ellie that he was okay, and then sleep for maybe 10 or 20 years. He turned left halfway up the town and continued on towards Carrigallen, the next town over. As he did, he reflected on his day. He had had to see an architect about the plans for their house. The house was almost ready to go, except for a few finishing touches. The kind of touches that, if missed, could be a major pain in the ass to discover afterwards. They would have gone to a local architect, one of the guys in Cavan, maybe. But Luke knew this guy from school, and he was able to get a very small, but very helpful discount from him. "Shortcut, shortcut," he muttered, studying the road hard under the twilight. He was going towards Carrick on Shannon, but that was a good 40 minutes away, and he just knew there had to be a quicker way. There was always a quicker way. "Come on, give me a shortcut." The sky was darkening all the time, turning into deeper shades of blue and purple. The sun was almost completely gone from the sky. The night was coming in fast, as if he was driving into the dark itself, all the while repeating aloud that he wanted a shortcut. He slowed down at a meeting of four roads. He knew which way to get to Carrick, but he wanted to stop and see if there was a quicker way. Straight on was Carrigallen, followed by Mohill, then Carrick itself. To his left and right were towns he had never heard of. He looked at the sign pointing right, the same direction as Carrick, as the bird flies, and made a decision, quickly, that that was the way he was going to go. It seemed better than going the normal way, and besides, all towns inevitably lead to one another. This one could be no different, and since it was the right direction, his logic dictated that this must be the wisest way to go. He carried on, watching the road as he turned right, and then glanced up at the sign. The town he was heading for was called Black Lodge. It was 5 kilometers away. The drive to Black Lodge didn't last long, and the scenery, still visible against the coming dark, prevented the drive from becoming monotonous. Even though it was fields on either side, and not much more, he never once got bored. For the entire drive, his thoughts never wavered from the town. He never once thought about Ellie, or that she might be at home worrying. He only thought about Black Lodge, and watched the fields and trees and ditches pass by in a slow blur on either side, dotted here and there by an old barn or a single curious-looking cow. Even the road, which was probably the worst he had ever driven on, and which was probably doing nothing but harm to his car, didn't bother him. Not one little bit. And he drove on, concentrating only on Black Lodge, finding himself almost excited at the idea that soon he'd be there in the town. He chuckled, wondering why he gave a crap about a town. It would just be another shitty little squat of a place, a bizarre grouping of random and useless shops and houses, filled with country folk who didn't give a shit unless you'd lived there for a few hundred years. It would be one of those places where you could pull up at a petrol station and be treated to almost horrified looks, as though you were asking for their blood. "Stealing our town supply, are ye?" He chuckled again, and ahead of him he could see the steeple of a church appearing above the trees that lined the road, pointing heavenward like a single gray finger. He drove slowly into the town, watching carefully on either side for road signs. The main street of the town was short enough that you could throw a good-sized stone from one end to the other, and his predictions about the appearance of the town had been almost unnervingly right. It was nothing but a closely packed blob of old-looking houses and one or two darkened shop fronts. He reached the end of the town and considered the road ahead. It looked ancient. He had a feeling it went nowhere but into the middle of a field. "Looks like a dead end that way," he remarked aloud, not hearing himself speak. He turned the car around in the road and headed back to the main street, driving slowly and switching his gaze between both sides of the thin street. The town was nice enough. It was pretty primitive, and it had no petrol station. It looked as though the hands of the modern age had passed it right by, leaving it somewhere in the last century. But still, it was nice. It was the kind of place that would be perfect for raising a family. Sure, everyone would know your business, or think they did, but it looked cozy and safe. The houses were those two-story townhouses they stopped building a long time ago. The paint peeled from their facades, and the gutters were filled with grass. The only two shops in the town looked pretty much empty, their windows dark and dusty and unused, the signs above them displaying the worn and faded names of older generations, like the reflection from a mirror that can look into the past. A number of the houses had dim lights on inside, and he slowed down outside one of them, considering knocking. He didn't leave the car, though. He just sat and watched the house in silence, debating with himself whether or not it was rude to knock on someone's door at this time. He looked back over his shoulder towards the road that looked like it went nowhere. Then he looked forward in the direction of the crossroads he had come from. He was silently damning himself for wanting a shortcut. He had just wasted a half hour, and explaining to Ellie why he was 2 hours late was about to become a more difficult thing to do. "Bloody impatience," he muttered, looking back at the glowing windows of the houses. He opened the door, stepping out onto the street and turning to the houses. As he watched the window of one of the houses, he spotted someone across the street. It was a man, standing on his own against the wall of a building partially obscured by shadow and only shifting slightly in his position. Luke looked up, expecting to see blown streetlights. It didn't surprise him as much as he thought it would to find that there were no streetlights at all. Tall wooden poles that stuck pointlessly out of the ground, but no streetlights. He closed the car door, locking it out of habit, and walked towards the man. "Hello!" he called out, watching the man carefully. The man only swayed slightly, as though drunk, but made no other move. "I think I'm lost. Do you know the best way to..." Luke's voice trailed off as he neared the man and saw that it wasn't a man at all. It was a shadow thrown on the wall. He stopped suddenly in the middle of the street, looking at the man-shaped shadow, except the shadow was looking less and less like the shape of a person the more he looked at it. "Could have sworn I saw it moving," he said thoughtfully. He took another step, but a tiny spark of fear took him, the kind of fear you feel as a child looking at the wardrobe and convinced that the shadows on either side of it are things coming out of the night to grab you and take you away. That's what the shadow on the wall felt like. It was long and dark and seemed to move under the light of the half moon. Worse than that, and worse than his imagination, the shadow seemed almost to be looking at him, staring at him, and silently waiting. For what? What was it waiting for? He shook his head and giggled nervously to himself. "Don't be silly, Luke," he thought. His adult mind had kicked back in and forced the bad thoughts out. But still, he didn't turn his back on the shadow. He walked slowly backwards, watching it all the time and feeling like at any second the shadows might stand up and follow him. It would stand and step onto the road, a shadowless shadow. Out of the corner of his eye, barely in his periphery, he saw a movement. In a split second, his mind froze up, squeezed, as though fear needed more room than his thoughts could give. His head darted in the direction of the movement, but there was nobody there. He had stopped walking, his eyes now moving along the breadth of the thin street, but he saw no more movement. Just a short, quiet street. As he was beginning to continue walking backwards towards the car, he noticed that the houses were now in darkness. There had been lights in the windows before. There definitely had, but now there were none. It wasn't such a strange thing if everybody on the street went to bed at the same time, but he couldn't get his head around that. He turned to face it, almost fast enough to off-balance himself, but he managed to stay upright. He shook his head, denying what he was seeing, but knowing he was seeing it. The shadow had moved. It had moved at least 5 feet up along the wall in his direction. His logic told him at once that it was just the moon, but aside from the fact that he could see no source for the shadow, the moon just couldn't have moved that fast in the sky. "There's no way it could," he said aloud and straightened up in a jet of panicked fear when he heard his voice coming back at him. like an echo. There's no way it could. There's no way it could. There's no way it could. But it wasn't his voice, and it had come from the direction of the shadow. It had come right out of the thick blackness of the shadow's form, and had mimicked him menacingly. His eyes fixed on the shadow, while his thoughts scrambled for some kind of coherence, trying to decide whether to slowly back up to the car or just turn and run to it, and maybe the shadow wouldn't jump off the wall. Maybe it wouldn't follow him and catch him just before he could get in. Maybe it wouldn't. He wanted to move, to run back to the safety of the car. He wanted to be gone, driving home the normal route, and to have never come to the town. His eyes remained mostly on the shadow, watching it and waiting for it to move. The waiting was horrible. He could see it shiver. But that could only be an illusion. It just couldn't be moving. It had to be the tree behind him, casting its shadow and shaking in the breeze. But there was no breeze, and the shadow clearly started from the ground, not cast along the width of the street as it should have been. He couldn't blink, terrified that it would come at him when he did. But his eyes had begun to sting, and tears formed at the sides of his eyelids, blurring his vision. This made it worse. Through his tears, the thing seemed to shake wildly. Finally, he raised one hand to his eyes and rubbed them quickly, taking out the tears and relieving the stinging dryness. A strong bolt of almost painful terror jetted through his body when he opened his eyes again and saw the shadow had not stopped its wild motions. It was shaking violently, and still he got the distinct feeling that it was watching him. Something was happening. He could feel it. Something was happening. He took a few quick steps back toward the car, his hands frantically searching his pockets for the keys. All the time, his eyes remained locked on the hideous shadow that contorted madly on the wall. A movement to his right. His eyes darted toward it, and a fresh burst of electrical terror waved through him, and then he saw another shadow forming on the wall beside the first. The second shadow wasn't as tall as the first, but it was moving in the same way, billowing in wind that wasn't there. He could only stare at it in paralyzed shock and fear, but his attention was wrenched from it by a third movement, this one to the left, further down the wall, moving in exactly the same way as the others. He groaned, unable to form words and not knowing what words to form. More shadows appeared on the wall, every one of them moving like black, semi-transparent kites, watching him with invisible eyes. They wanted to do something, and they were trying hard. He knew it. He just knew it. They looked like they were struggling to escape their positions on the wall, and he suddenly wondered how long it would take him to do it. How long did he have to get back in the car and get out of town? What would they do if they broke free of the wall? One of them shot across the wall, and Luke heard a high-pitched scream fade into existence as it moved. Luke screamed too, and turned his back on the shadows, self-preservation becoming blind panic and fear as he ran to his car and clambered around to the driver's side door. He fumbled with his keys at the lock, but he could barely keep his eyes away from the mass of shadows gathering on the wall. His key found the lock and fell in, almost turning on its own volition. He opened the door and scrambled into the seat. As he did, another scream came from the wall. It sounded deep and high at the same time, and it was an evil, angry screech that made him stop everything for a moment and stare in blank terror at the shadows. Momentarily, his mind was lost in that terror. But when the other shadows joined in with the first and a wave of screaming came to his ears, he came to and started the engine. He was at the point of tears when he finally managed to insert the key in the ignition and get the car started, and as he pulled away, driving as fast as he could out of town, he looked in his rearview and saw one of the shadows break free of the wall. He screamed and sped up, watching the shadows enter the center of the street and then follow him, wailing horribly as it did. Luke watched the road in between glances at the rear view, and he could see more of the shadows coming, peeling off the wall like old paint and following him on shadow legs. The car jumped and bounced, and he looked at the road, but the road wasn't there anymore. It was a field he was on now, and the car didn't like driving on it at almost 60. It jumped and bucked, and for a moment of sheer terror, Luke felt sure that the axle would snap and the vehicle would come to a skidding stop in the field. They'd get him then. They'd find him and take him. He'd end up no more than a shadow on a wall, dancing and screaming for freedom. Tears streamed from his eyes, and he cursed at himself for not staying on the road. In the rear view, when he got a chance to glance up at it, he saw the shadows begin to slow in their pursuit. They seemed to be slowing and giving up the chase. He watched them constantly, relieved and forgetting for a long moment that he was in a field and doing almost 40 miles an hour. When his eyes turned forward again, the relief disappeared and the blood drained from his face. He was heading straight for a hedge, on the other side of which was a road. The car careened towards the hedge, and he could only scream and raise his arms in an effort to protect himself. He screamed and screamed and waited, and it seemed to take forever, like a single moment of infinity, never knowing when he would reach the hedge and afraid to open his eyes to see. Then he was in motion, being thrown around wildly like the shadows on the wall. The car had skidded on the wet field and turned left just before hitting the hedge. It crashed through the bush, narrowly missing a mature weeping willow and sending an explosion of bushes, leaves, and undergrowth into the sky. It tumbled onto the road, sparks flying when it struck the tarmac and turned left again, traveling the road rather than going through the ditch on the other side. He could hear the sound of steel grinding tarmac and the smell of burning as the wheels spun wildly and scraped up the road. But sounds had faded, like the smell, sinking into a place in the back of his mind, as if he was in a dream. The car turned again, its momentum flipping it over and chucking it up in a small arc. A heavy weight bore down on Luke's legs, and he screamed in agony, waking up slightly before drifting away again. He was thrown forward violently, and his head smashed hard into the steering wheel. He cried out in a flash of pain, and then all was dark. The car continued to skid, Luke unconscious inside, and came to a slow stop almost 100 feet from where it had entered the road. He woke screaming, looking with half-vision at the shadow that was pulling him from the wreck. It was waving wildly and laughing and screaming into his face. It was taking him back to the wall, and he would spend eternity there. "Luke!" the shadow said. "Luke Harden! Can you hear my voice?" Then it wasn't a shadow. It was a man, and he was looking at Luke with worried eyes. "Luke! Can you hear my voice?" Luke mumbled something, but it came out as nonsense, so he nodded instead. His legs throbbed with a dull pain, and his neck was sore. He looked down, and he could see blood. That was when he fainted, the voice of the paramedic fading out of his thoughts. When he woke again, he was in the ambulance, strapped to the gurney. The ambulance was moving fast, and the paramedic from before was sitting beside him, looking forward and urging the driver to hurry. "He's in trouble, Sean! Hurry the hell up!" Luke groaned, and the man looked down. "Luke, stay still now, buddy. Don't try to move. We're taking you to Kavan General, okay? You're going to be fine, buddy." Luke tried to speak, but the words were only whispers. The paramedic leaned down to him.
"The town," Luke whispered. "Black Lodge."
"What town, Luke?" the man said calmly.
"Black Lodge," Luke repeated, a little louder this time. "I was there last night."
The man thought about this for a second, then looked back at Luke with an expression like he'd just discovered a rare artifact, but he didn't answer. He just looked forward again.
"What?"
Luke demanded, looking up at the man.
"You know something. What?"
"I know Black Lodge," the man said, turning back to Luke. His face was pained. "Why were you there, Luke? No one's lived there for probably 100 years or more now." He paused and his face became gray. "There was a workhouse there a long time ago, just outside of town. The guy that owned it locked it up one day while everyone was inside and burned it to the ground." Luke watched him, his heart sinking. The man continued. "After that, everyone moved away. They just abandoned the town and never went back." He looked back out to the driver. "Come on, Sean, this guy's in a bad way." Luke closed his eyes. In his mind's eye, he could still see those shadows dancing on the wall. Dancing forever. Places have power, weight. Perhaps not all places have the pull of Black Lodge, but we've all been places we don't like, and sometimes we don't even know why. I think it's one of those extra senses we hear so much about. It's there, and we can feel it, but we can't seem to nail it down. If you like this week's story, feel free to tell a friend, spread it on Twitter, or leave us a review on iTunes. I have a couple of announcements to make before I leave you this week. First, I want you all to welcome Tia Brink to the podcast. She's been gracious enough to help out with the editing, and truth be told, she's better at it than I am. Follow her on Twitter at Tia L. Brink, all one word. And secondly, we are close to my goal of becoming a paying market. but we can only do that if you, the listeners, show your appreciation for the stories you hear by donating to the site. Writers want to get paid. They deserve to be paid. It seems to me writing is the only profession where people expect something for nothing. Yes, we do it because we love it. And we would probably do it for free if we had to. But so would an artist, or even a computer programmer who loves what he does. But we'd never even think to ask them to do it for free. Help us get there. At the very least, I hope to be able to keep the authors who entertain us stocked up on paper and pencils. As usual, this week's intro music was The Cove by The Contrarian. You can find out more at thecontrarianmedia.com. This episode was licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Thanks for listening. Stay well.